America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's not very good at math, so we can't figure out what the result of gelatinous cubed is. It's SifPop. Welcome to SifPop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays. You're available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patron get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Critical Role.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he came here thinking there's a way out of this world for him. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
That's morbid. Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. I meant the podcast, Andrew. I meant the podcast. Why you gotta be so morbid? And please welcome our guest this week. I was really hoping that Jonathan would be here instead today, but it's Ian Whittington, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, ahoy. Wick. No Vodkins. Way. Hello, everyone. I've seen 50% of the movies this week.
So, and because of that, you don't necessarily get the Jonathan reference, but
no,
but yes, it is. Yes, it was a great reference.
Oh,
was,
I agree. I'm sure it was
brilliant.
It was
big problem. Slade. Yeah. It kills. It's Slade.
Well done.
So, wait, Ian, you're stateside now. So
I am.
What's your excuse, young man?
There was a last-minute emergency. Everyone is fine, but it prevented me from going to see Dungeons and Dragons.
He was very, very sad.
Like, minutes before I had to set off.
He was literally experiencing, like, a real-life adventure where he had to make life-saving throws.
There were multiple nat ones that were rolled, and then I rolled a nat 20 to save the day. But yeah. I had to sacrifice my main campaign for this side quest, sadly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what a great hero does, Ian.
It is a little, right? It is a little bit of a bummer, but here's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to your questions about the movie, things you might want to know non-spoilery, because we obviously don't go into spoilers on the main episode, and I actually don't know that we'll do a Sif spoil for Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know that one's needed. John Wick we probably will do. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff at the end I want to talk about with John Wick. But you are, it is sad in the fact that you are a very, very vehement D&D
yes,
player.
I am.
And so that would have been fun. But Andrew, you're also a D&D player. So we will definitely have that perspective on the show either way. So looking forward to those conversations about John Wick Chapter 4 and Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which I keep forgetting to say the subtitle, but I should because...
Yes, you know, it's not the 1990...
the Jeremy Irons one.
Version.
Right,
yeah.
That was 2000, actually.
I know, I keep forgetting this.
It
I keep
looks
thinking that movie came
older.
Out in the 80s, but it didn't. It's 2000. It's wild.
We'll also, of course, do some best ever challenge, some buried treasure, all that kind of fun stuff. Before we get into it, I do also want to say Andrew does the pre-show now, and our SifPop members for their pre-show will have access to a D&D campaign that he set up for Ian and I. That we ran for the pre-show. So thank you to our SifPop members and you can thank Andrew for the fun that you're about to experience.
A lot of things can happen in 15 minutes.
You know what? I have to say this. Out of every single campaign that I've either DM'd or created the world for, having a campaign that lasts 15 minutes or less is one of the most challenging and difficult things that I've...
Oh, for sure.
It's wild how... You know, that limitation affects your ability to tell a story.
But we had a blast.
I really do hope you did.
Genuinely.
We didn't need longer than 15 minutes to have fun. So you can...
And Aaron, you just dove right in with your character and everything. Yeah. I was so pleased.
Listen. If you're going to go for it, right?
You did. So
speaking of going for it, let's do some movie reviews, shall we? Let's start it off with John Wick Chapter 4.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend. day is dawning. New ideas, new rules, new management.
We've known each other since we were 9 or 10.
Who is this?
The Marquis de Grammont. Challenge him to single combat. Win or lose, it's a way out.
I don't sit at the table.
Your family does.
Please pray for me.
With the price on his head ever increasing, John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. But before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes. As the title says, this is the fourth chapter in the John Wick series. Keanu Reeves coming back as Mr. Jonathan Wick.
Canoe.
And yeah, and a lot of the people you know from before, some new faces you might not have seen before. I will mention Donnie Yen coming in kind of as the main secondary character in this movie. But I'm curious what you guys think. I think this is going to be a fun conversation. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian's going to start us off.
Very, very high side of liked it. Very high, very high. Close into loved it. But I'm not going to commit to that until I've had another viewing.
Andrew.
Aaron. I'm right with Ian. That's like exactly the same spot I am. Close to loving it, but I can't pull the trigger on it.
I think I was on like high side of okay, low side of liked it when I first saw it. It is not aging well. I'm firmly and didn't liked it at this point.
Oh, wow.
It's sinking fast.
Wow.
In my perception. So... maybe a fun conversation, but let's love on the movie a little bit first.
Why did you hate this movie?
Not yet, but give me another week. Uh-huh. Give me another week. You never know. It sounds like we'll start with Ian. Ian, tell us some amazing things about this movie.
I mean, without making you sound like a jerk, what's not to like about it? It's so much fun. It's exactly what I want and expect from a John Wick movie. A lot of action, but a lot of really well thought out, well choreographed, watchable action. There's only 3 cuts in the entire movie, and that really shows. It's amazing. And there's some really inventive stuff, like a particular overhead shot that is incredible. Would I like a little bit more acting from Keanu? Yeah, of course I would. Of course I would. But, I mean, I'm going to need a gun. It worked for me. I don't know. My expectations were very, very low, despite the first 3 being really entertaining, excellent movies. I didn't immediately rewatch them before going into this movie, so I didn't exactly remember why he was still on the run, but the movie kind of caught me up enough, and I just had fun. I just had fun with it, Aaron. Why don't you like fun?
It's just this is part of me. I'm just very pessimistic.
Yes.
You know, it's just
famous for it. In fact.
Yeah, it's just kind of how I'm defined. And Andrew, talk a little bit about this movie.
I liked many things about this movie, obviously, but the first I want to talk about is Donnie Yen. He is probably my favorite part about this entire movie. I've always loved Donnie Yen. He's one of my favorite, like, martial art stuntmen that's ever donned Hollywood. He's up there with Jackie Chan for me. And seeing him not only have, you know, great fight scenes, but I found his character, Kane, very fascinating. It's a very... It feels like this movie's trying to say, if we're not careful, what happened to John will happen to him. And it's interesting having... I think this movie actually it struggles with some certain things that I don't think have been like a narrative standpoint since the first movie. I think this movie's trying to say a lot more than even 2 or 3 did.
I can say a few good things about this. I'm going to say a lot of good things about a movie that I'm continuously feeling like I didn't like. One of the main things I'm going to say is I think underneath this one is a lot more interesting thematic work than has been in the last 2. I think this one is trying to really do something and say something about revenge. Is it something new about revenge? Not really. We've heard this message before, but it's more clearly, I think, in some of the scenes showing, especially if you consider the post-credit scene, which I won't spoil for you, but like there is something this movie is saying about how violence and revenge are a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. There is no winning this game that the people in these movies are playing. Now, eventually I will talk about the cognitive dissonance of, well, then why is it such a fun game?
Yeah.
But for now, I think it's worth saying that I did appreciate that. I think that's a good message. I think that's a solid thing to think about and to talk about. And I think the movie takes enough time with that it's there. I think it's buried fairly well, but it is there. It is definitely there. It is certainly not the first thing most people coming out of John Wick Chapter 4 are going to be talking about.
Perhaps not. It's almost a nod to like how long the movies are going on for as well. It's like, hey, this is the fourth movie. How is this? And that's the point. It will never end.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's amazing. I think Donnie Yen is incredible. Mm-hmm. I think his character is so compelling. This and probably was my favorite character in the movie. And I found myself in some ways wishing maybe it was a Donnie Yen movie, and it kind of is. Mm-hmm. So I really, really did like that. And of course the inventive visuals are really cool. Like it's always cool to try new things, do new things. You can tell they really, really care about their craft. Mm-hmm. Their art. They've talked many times about the fun they have making sure that the reloads are correct and the mm-hmm. number of rounds are correct and all that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of care and concern put into this, and it shows on screen in many, many ways. What are some other thoughts you guys have?
I'm just captivated by Keanu. It is amazing how with so few words, watching him just dance and do this choreography of death, as like morbid as it is, that every other or like kind of every movement is heading towards killing someone, it's still a beautiful ballet and a dance to watch. And I will take the occasional flub that you can maybe see in the background over having the camera completely still, like just plonking the camera down, watching these two people dance it out. Some of it can look a little bit wooden, I think, especially in this entry.
But it's a no-win situation, right?
And that's what I'm saying. I would much rather this than 1,000 cuts that hide all of those mistakes. Right. So yeah, it's just eye candy for me. I just love watching it.
There is something really spectacular about the idea of lock it off, show what's really happening mm-hmm. in the room. That doesn't mean there's not some digital stuff going on in places, stunt doubles with face replacement, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of things. But I think Keanu is doing, it looks very much like Keanu is doing a lot of this.
He's falling down those steps over and over again.
I doubt that part, but you know, there are many parts it looks like Keanu is doing. Mm-hmm. I understand completely what you're saying about that. Andrew, some other thoughts?
I think that out of all the John Wick movies, this one feels like it's the most narrative driven mm-hmm. as opposed to action driven.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the first one, or do you mean including the first one?
I think even including the first one, I think that the first movie is so good because it's so simple. It's a keep it simple, stupid element.
But it is narrative driven. You know, being simple doesn't necessarily negate it being narrative.
Yeah. You know what? You're 100% right. Yeah. So, but I still feel like there's an actual, like, maybe it's just because 2 and 3 were so, just action oriented. Mm-hmm. And I guess you could say the plot was only in service of an action scene, where I think in this movie, mm-hmm. the action scenes are in service of the story again, finally.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else do you guys want to say? Do you guys want to do your negatives before I kind of do mine? Or because neither of you are like full on love, love, love this. So what is mm-hmm. it that kind of keeps you from being in that final category?
It's exactly the reason why I like the movie so much. There's a little bit of fatigue where this is a long, long movie, and
I think it's bloated. I really do.
And there is. there is something to the novelty of sitting in a fight scene longer than you would usually see to, cool, when's the next thing? Because I wanted a little bit more story. And I agree, like, this has got some of the best story that we've seen in the franchise, but it lives in these extended fight sequences so much, and then the pace kind of crashes a little bit, and then we go back to the next huge set piece. And I think it had more to say, especially with the revenge stuff and the Donnie Yen stuff. I think we could have lived in that a bit more, or just reduced the runtime.
But, you know, I would almost rather have Ian McShane walking down a hall of giant art for 2 minutes. You know, I would almost rather have that than the 20th knock over the head with a nunchuck.
Oh, completely agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, because that served something in that moment. Right. That was the tension and the opulence, and that really did something for me.
I think the nunchucks is my clearest example of how I feel like the fighting is bloated in this, because it's
for me, it's a stairwell.
The stairwell is bloated?
I love the stairwell.
Yeah, I think the stairwell works better than the nunchucks, but also
nunchucks.
What's that?
But also nunchucks.
But just to, you know, it's like, okay, I get it. He hit somebody over the head with the nunchucks 5 times. Cool. Oh, okay, 10. Oh, 20? Oh, we're 30. We're going with 30. Oh, you know, whatever it is. It just seems to go on so long.
He forgot to take the Nerf padding off of the nunchucks. That's what he had to really go at it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's gotta.
Yeah, yeah. So
I like how in this movie, we don't want to see a fight between two characters. Like, the movie's building up this entire sequence, of this fight. Can you remember a single time? You could
say between three characters, by the way.
Yeah.
That is very true. You could
say we're rooting for three characters that are all in, you know, combat with each other.
Yeah. I don't think I can remember a single character in John Wick that I didn't want him to, like, fight, like, whether it be, I forget the Italian family's name from the second one, you know, he wanted to fight them, you know, and the audience wanted him, you know, to get revenge and everything. The whole John Wick franchise is kill this person, get revenge. Now we finally get a person where, like, please don't fight them. I don't want you to fight them.
Yeah, I don't want one of these people to die.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm surprised it took them this long to use that as a storytelling device.
Yeah. Andrew, what was it for you? What was it that kept you from just full on loving this?
Too many fight scenes is really what is keeping me. It is such a long movie.
What a strange thing to say about a John Wick film. We sound like idiots.
It's interesting to me. I agree with you, but I did not expect all of us to agree on this point, because I would expect, especially people who love this movie, I would expect many of them to feel like, no, more, just keep piling it on. Like, you know, there is not too much. I'm
really waiting for that rewatch, because that second time round will really tell me if it drags or not. Because the first time round, it is all novelty, but I still felt it in the moment that this is amazing, but probably 5 minutes too long in every instance.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that there are so many sequences in this movie where I'm like, I wish that sequence was longer. And I'm like, yeah, you could have cut out that fight scene. Like, I think the beginning of this movie is a little bit rushed in Osaka. Whole sequence, I'm like,
we could have spent a bit more time there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always interested to see continentals in different areas. You know, for some reason, that the world building that this franchise has done over the years is so fun. Here's my biggest complaint with this movie. There weren't enough rockabilly girls doing paperwork and filing away, you know, information about. Yeah. That's my biggest complaint.
The world building?
Not enough rockabilly girls.
Totally get it. I will say I have two main complaints about this movie that continue to linger on and draw me down the precipice of the not liking this movie's stairs. I at one point stood upon the stairs of, hey, maybe I liked this, and I no longer do. So one of them is, and I think I've talked about this a little bit before, I really feel like with this franchise, the simple way to say it is it's gone a direction I'm not interested in, right? Like, the first movie I still to this day love. It is, like you said, simple. It's driven. The story is very clear. You know what's going on. And it still kind of gets into a little bit of fun world building and some things you're like, oh, what is this universe? You know, that kind of stuff. And then the franchise just became more and more interested in the parts of the first one that wasn't my favorite part. It was something that was okay for me. And because of that, there's almost, and again, this is a terrible comparison in some ways, but I think it gets to the heart of what I'm saying. There's a Fast and Furious-ification of the John Wick universe, mm-hmm. where it becomes this bigger superhero version of this simple thing, right? Now, I'm not comparing them on quality levels or those kind of things, but I think in many ways, and this may be a compliment or a takedown depending on your opinions, I think this is kind of the Fast Five of the John Wick movies, where it's like obtaining what it always wanted to be and what, you know, the place where it wanted to go. There are many people, I'm kind of one of them, who think Fast Five is the best Fast and Furious movie, you know, because of that embracing of what it is.
That's an interesting comparison, considering you don't like this one, but you love Fast Five.
It is an interesting comparison, and we can get into reasons why. And I will do that shortly. But before I do, I just want to say there is something that is captivating and compelling about a movie going, nope, this is what I am. Yeah. This is like, look, I'm a 3-hour fight movie. That's what I am.
If we'd have had the money, we'd have done this with the first one.
So for me, the difference is the Fast and Furious 1 is not a movie I love. The Fast and Furious 1 is an okay movie, right?
That's my favorite.
And that's
but
fine.
I get what you're saying.
But it's not a movie that I love. And so for me, the Fast movies, going into, oh no, we're all superheroes with cars, I was like, cool, let's go superheroes with cars. That's kind of amazing, you know? Whereas this one, I loved the first one so much, and then it's going, hey, we're going superheroes with guns. I'm like, I want to go back to the character I loved in the first one, and just kind of the simplicity of the first one. So that, I think that's the difference, is these movies found themselves by arriving at a place I wasn't interested in, and the Fast movies found themselves by arriving at a place I was interested in. So, but I do think there are a lot of similarities in kind of the progress of those universes. That's one thing for me for this movie where I'm just like, when I think back of the things I like in this movie, there's 5 to 10 minutes of things in a 2-hour and 40-minute movie.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, because I'm not counting all the, like, so like, okay. So a lot of people talk about like the above shot with the cool flashy
in the warehouse
gun or whatever. I'm like, I've seen that in video games a million times. Like,
yeah,
I don't
the movies.
Well, no, I understand, but it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, that's not captivating to me. And this leads me to my biggest negative. And Ian, we've had actually a one-on-one conversation about this as well, and it just won't escape me. And I want to say, before I say this, there are, when you say things like this, it can ring a little judgmental. And I promise you that's not what I mean here. I'm talking about my own my own personal processing of some cognitive dissonance. I every day find gunplay less and less fun. I just like the idea that guns are the object here becomes more and more distracting to me. So when I think back about scenes, so many of them are about shooting guns, headshots, multiple shots, you know, loading guns. There's this gun worship that goes in movies like this that is it becomes more and more difficult for me not to be distracted by. If it were all swords and arrows, I think I'd be better. Like, and I think the reason that is because there is something, it's not that somebody couldn't use a sword or an arrow to do massive destruction to the people around them. It's just that that's not the culture we're in. Yeah. Like, it's not a sword and arrow culture. There's a gun culture, and you know, there's something that just eats at my brain about, like, are we going to 20 years from now look back at all the gun movies and just be like, man, what were we thinking? And it's something I'm processing. That's it. And so that distracts me. It's hard for me to fall into the enjoyment of a lot of those scenes, because it's people shooting each other, and it's so the whole ballistic ballet thing becomes very distracting to me.
Well, I understand that completely. My where I differ is I think that arrow and sword and knife combat, for me personally, triggers like an intensity way more than a gunfight does. I think that there's way more brutality and, you know, just visceral horridness in like a sword fight, with people actually losing limbs as opposed to a pow, and then they fall over.
But that's the problem. That, to me, that's the problem. The problem is that guns aren't visceral. Like, there is no wrestling
easy.
With the absolute the destruction that firearms do. It does just becomes pulls a trigger and a guy goes down. Like, and it is this weapon we are wrestling with as a culture, from many different angles and many different views, and I understand that, but it's definitely something we're wrestling with. When, you know, a superhero in a Marvel movie, you know, kills somebody with a neutron blast or whatever. I don't know what a neutron blast is. I have no idea why I said that.
It's a Star Trek thing.
it to me is a little easier to deal with because it's fantasy and nobody is claiming that here in the real world is something that they, you know, want to take part in and want to do. But when it's guns, there are, and it's harder for me to process and deal with. So that is some insight into why the movie has descended down the stairs for me in many ways, because I just can't shake that. And it's getting harder and harder for me to find action movies that I can really enjoy without being distracted by my own cognitive dissonance. So yeah, there you go. That is probably the main thing that's been moving it down. It's a weird place to be when you don't want it to be as fun as it is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you look at it and you go, oh, that's so fun. Why? But no.
Stop it.
Stop being fun.
Stop making me love you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's...
No, I get that.
There's something that happens there. So
Just switch your brain off, Aaron, and enjoy it.
I want to ask a question. Hopefully it doesn't sound too inappropriate, but you guys were in Nashville, you know, not too
that's true.
Long ago. Does something like that affect your opinion coming fresh? Do you think the freshness of that is affecting
when you? Columbine happened, it was this weird thing that nobody could believe.
Yeah.
And now we are, you know, 30 years later, or however long it's been, and it's just something you look at and go, yeah, another one. You know what I mean? Like, the culture has changed to such a point that, so I don't know that the Nashville thing specifically is, you know, I mean, it is weighing on me just as something that happened, and I just can't imagine the trauma in the everything about that situation. But I don't think it's specifically the weight of the Nashville thing, because Ian and I's conversation was before the Nashville thing happened. So, yeah. Like, you know, I've already been processing this for the last several years, and I don't think it makes anybody who produced this or made this or acted in it or likes it or anything. I don't think it makes any of those people a bad person.
Oh, no. But, I hope you didn't think that that's what I was thinking you were saying.
No.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, in the same way, it could be, I'm only in my own perspective, I don't know, but it could be the same thing where I don't think any of the people who acted, participated in, wrote, whatever, movies that made jokes that are now inappropriate are also bad people. Like, you know, because we just progress as a culture sometimes. We evolve to a different understanding of what's funny, what's cool, what's entertaining. We have a lot to reckon with about entertainment, because the parts of us that are excited by certain parts of life are kind of dangerous parts. You know, like there are many things, whether it be a titillation of violence or sex or whatever it might be, that there is this thing that can happen where the things that excite us the most are also the things we need to be most in control of. And so Or these tendencies to, you know, team up against each other or make fun of somebody so that we feel better about ourselves or whatever, you know, bullying, whatever it is. I think as a culture, we have to continue to evolve and go, remember that thing we did? Can you believe that was what we found entertaining? I think the same will probably be said of football someday. Can you believe we thought that was entertaining? You know, like it's just it's just change. It's just progress. And it doesn't make the people who exist in the moments of whatever in the past bad people. It just means entertainment is a really difficult thing for us to find our moral center on sometimes. What entertains? What is gladiatorial? And what is just fun entertainment? So.
Basically, what you're saying is you like Donnie Yen in this movie.
I really did. I really did like him.
Because of his cane. I get it.
It's a really cool character. He was also blind in
Rogue One, too, right?
Yeah. I was beginning to wonder, is Donnie Yen blind? Yeah.
No, he's been making jokes about that. Like, I can't wait to play a person who can see in a movie. So.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about some other good stuff. I feel like I've brought us down a little bit. Talk about some of the other murdering people that you guys like.
No, honestly,
I mean, there was this one moment where like a bow and arrow went through a guy's knee, and then he's like pivoting on it. That was hilarious. It was great. It was ragdoll physics.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, honestly, the parts of this movie that I love the most are two characters trying not to fight each other. You know, like whenever they talk to each other and they're like, Donnie Yen, you understand why he's doing what he's doing. You know, he's a very empathetic character. And it's interesting to have two empathetic characters, you know, at odds with each other. And you don't blame either one of them, really. Actually, you could, if you really were to like break it down as far as you could, you would probably think that Donnie Yen is more of the hero of the story than John Wick is. I think that at the end of the day, you'd come away going, yeah, I think that Donnie Yen is the better person than John.
I don't know. Donnie Yen's character definitely kills a good guy. Like, straight up murders a good guy.
But,
right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you know, if you can define a good guy in this universe. Yeah, but yeah. It's definitely, there's definitely a moment where Donnie Yen decides to kill someone who A, is defenseless at that moment, like is, you know, not able to really keep up with them. And yeah, you're right. Never mind.
He gives that person many, many options of him just saying, please stop. I don't want to do this. That's why I think, and you know, it's going to be spoiler-ish, but it's at the very beginning of the movie. He's trying to protect his daughter. You know, so there's a paternal, like a familiarity that the audience can grab onto saying, yeah, oh, he's trying to protect his daughter. Yeah. And you could say, well, John was trying to protect the name or the honor of his wife and Daisy, the dog, you know, that's what he was doing. So that's what made him empathetic. And the way this movie boils down. Oh, I can't believe I haven't brought this up yet, but Lance Reddick. Just several days before
I was going to bring that
release. That's so sad.
Yeah. I was going to chat about that as my one last thing. I think it's always interesting and in this case sad when the real world collides with a movie like this. But it was because of the role he plays in the movie, it was difficult. That moment was difficult to watch. And I know it happened so close to the release that I think that first weekend, maybe even the second weekend, they weren't able to get any kind of like dedicated to Lance Reddick or anything like that
in
the movie.
It was days before. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think they have sent new files that have like dedicated to Lance Reddick in it. And I know everybody is really sad about what happened, but it's weird when stuff collides like that and you just kind of have to process the difference between, you know, the real world. Let's do one last thing. If you've got anything else, Ian, what's your one last thing?
I think that I don't know. I might be tumbling down on this film. Thank you, Aaron.
Aaron
I might
be falling down the stairs myself. Everything.
My goodness. My one last thing is I still, despite everything, I hope to be in this universe more. I hope we get more movies in whatever forms they come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we know we're getting the ballerina in what, next year? There were 2 years. I can't remember.
But next year, I think.
Yeah. My one last thing, I can't remember if it's a mid-credit scene or a post-credit scene, but there is one. Yeah.
I think it's post.
Post. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's all the way at the end.
Yeah. Oh, it was D&D that had the mid-credit scene. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, so. Correct. D&D did have mid credits. Okay. Spoil your one last thing for the next movie.
My goodness.
Yeah, my one last thing is I think I might be in the minority, but I liked Bill Skarsgård's performance.
No, so did I. That's my one last thing.
Was that...
I take that back.
Is that a French guy?
I've heard a little bit of accent mockery.
That's fine. Just French.
That kind of thing.
That's your Swedish one last thing. French accent, you know?
Yeah.
If that's your one last thing, then I guess I'll make my one last thing Scott Adkins, who I had a chance to interview recently and enjoyed that interview. And he is probably the most ridiculous character in the movie.
Easily. Yep.
The most ridiculous hand of poker that means nothing and is played in no way that poker is played.
Okay. I hate that scene so much.
I hate it too. Yeah. It's so annoying.
That entire segment with Scott Adkins, for like you said, as much as I love him, that entire section could have been cut. All of it.
Yeah, it really could.
Yeah, it really could have, and it would have also cut that icky kind of thing in the back of my brain where it's like, are we laughing because he's fat? Is that what we're supposed to be doing right now? Like, is it? You know?
Oh, I never got that.
Yeah, it may be not, but it seems like maybe it's just the performance and he's being a goofball and that's why we're supposed to be laughing.
I think that's why.
But the, you know, look at the fat man do high kicks was a little bit weird at times. Scott Adkins has been doing incredible action stuff for a long, long time.
A very long time.
And it's cool to get him, get to see some pretty major screen time that all of us would have rather been cut out.
Yes.
So we love you, Scott.
Sorry.
We're glad for you. And also we would have done it differently.
He looks so much like Colin Farrell's Cobblepot from the Batman that I was, that's all I could think is like, oh, he's the Penguin fighting John Wick right now.
That stupid poker scene. All right. And also why does it sometimes Donnie Yen knows exactly what's going on without any, you know, help, and other times he needs stuff on the wall to make alarm noises.
I think he could tell the texture of the card, how it changes color from white to red.
All right.
Such a nitpicker.
I should get a job doing that.
Yeah.
You know, the greatest card shuffler in the world is blind.
Well, yeah, shuffling, so. Sure.
No, but a card, I guess, what would you call it? A card Counter? Mechanic?
Card mechanic?
A mechanic?
Well, yeah, but he's probably working with a marked deck. They can do the flips. Yeah. Like with a little, you know,
You should watch some of his videos. They're fascinating.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, that is John Wick Chapter 4, and let's move on to Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
Truth be told, we help the wrong person steal the wrong thing. We didn't mean to unleash the greatest evil the world has ever known. But we're gonna fix it.
So how do we pull that off?
Figure it out over a drink?
Probably best.
You need Kool-Aid!
To give us a fighting chance, we're gonna need strength. You got this, right?
I know you don't.
A charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers undertake an epic heist to retrieve a lost relic, but things go dangerously awry when they run afoul of the wrong people. This movie comes to us from the same writing directing team that brought us Game Night, which immediately got my interest up. It is about Dungeons & Dragons, but also not about Dungeons & Dragons. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian is avoiding watching the trailer as we speak since he has not seen the movie. Andrew, what did you think? Did you like it? Did you love it? Dislike it? Hate it? It was just okay.
Loved it.
Loved it.
Absolutely loved it.
Andrew, my official rating for this movie is loved it more than Andrew.
Yes. Nice. Nice. My rating is I'm extremely excited, like more so than I was. I'm pumped now. My expectations are probably too high. I'm going to hate it.
Yeah, I apologize for that. I'm interested to hear some of your questions after we kind of talk around some stuff.
Yeah.
But I will. The reason I say loved it more than Andrew is twofold. Number one, I want to start. Number two.
Nice. That's number, how you play poker.
Number two, yeah. Number two in my five of a kind of twos is that I think it is important to hear from the non-D&D person, yes, on this for a lot of reasons. And because I think one of the first things that I thought going into this is, oh, are we going to have a World of Warcraft situation again where I just feel like I'm being left out of every joke? I don't understand I don't understand the references, and the movie is like drawing red circles around its references that I don't get. You know, like, am I going to feel lost? I didn't feel that way in this movie at all. Like,
good. I was afraid.
No, in what I'm really curious to hear are what are the references? You know, like what references did I miss? That's really interesting to me, because the trick, I think, in a movie like this is being able to just be a great movie that somebody who's never played Dungeons and Dragons will enjoy. And also being the kind of movie that somebody that does play Dungeons and Dragons goes, oh, I bet that character is a bard, you know, or whatever it might be, you mm-hmm. know. And I think that's accomplished, at least as far as I know, really, really well here. I can only give the non-Dungeons and Dragons perspective here. I think my main positive for this movie, and then Andrew, I'll let you talk a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. Aside from the fact that I think everybody can get this movie, no matter what your familiarity with D&D is, I vibe with their sense of humor.
It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Daly and Goldstein, who as mentioned did Game Night, which is one of the best yeah. modern comedies that's been made. They just have such a sharp, hilarious sense of humor. There were so many moments during this movie that I was giggling or laughing or smirking or whatever. I just think they understand how to create something that is both narrative and dramatic and going somewhere, and also lighthearted and fun and almost frivolous. It's really interesting how they can combine the frivolous with the meaningful. And when I say meaningful, I'm not necessarily talking about deep philosophical stuff. I love that stuff, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking meaningful in the fact that it means something to the story, right? Like, it means something to these characters. It may be called back later. There, you know, this movie is really, really intricately woven, as Game Night was, and at the same time also severely funny, and in many of the same ways that the characters all have funny moments in Game Night, whether it's oh no, he died, or the reaction to pulling out the bullet, or the neighbor with the dog and the chips, and like you have all these moments where you're like, that movie's so funny, or the table not breaking, or whatever it might be. Like you can recall all these things in their movies, and I think Dungeons and Dragons is the same. I think there's so many funny little things that I'm not going to give away here because I want you to experience them. That after you've seen the movie, you'll really have had a good time with. And that is such a gift. Not everybody has that when writing. And I'm really impressed with their writing skills and directing. The movie looks great too. I could go on and on, but Andrew, why don't you say some good things?
The best thing I can say about this movie is it feels exactly like a campaign would be run. Like exactly.
No one turns up on time?
Yes, that's exactly it. No one turns up on time and everybody's on their phones yeah. whenever they're not in the combat order. No, but just the nods, I guess a good example I can give, just so Eric knows what type of scene I'm talking about, is the graveyard scene. That graveyard scene, I've seen that exact interaction play out hundreds of times. The authenticity to how an actual D&D campaign is run and like how it plays out is so amazing. It's as if, and I don't know, like if somebody told me this, I wouldn't be surprised if this was actually a D&D campaign, like all the choices and everything that we see these characters making are all predetermined by roles, you know, that like the people who actually played the story out. Like, if somebody were to tell me that this was the actual campaign that these guys had played, I wouldn't be surprised because it feels so genuine.
I would, for one main reason. It's just too it's everything works out too perfectly. Like I imagine there are, you know, I mean, it could all work out that way, but I imagine with D&D, part of the fun is that it, you know, it's unknown. Like you could roll the wrong rolls and all of a sudden, you know, other things happen. So
there are plenty of times in this movie where the characters roll the wrong rolls, as it were. No,
I'm talking about more like the intricacy of the plot. Like there's
oh, the narrativeness,
yeah,
of it all.
Yeah. Okay. But maybe I'm wrong. I could totally be wrong. I've never played D&D, so you could be absolutely right.
No, you have.
I'm sorry, yes. Yes, I have, Sin Club members.
Yeah. Because ours took place in Faerun, which is part of D&D. This takes place in the Forgotten Realms. A lot of the, Aaron, I know this is one of your questions you had, is how much of this is authentic? How many references are there to actual creatures, sure, or spells or anything? That's the whole movie. And that's what I was afraid of going into this and hearing your review, is like, man, I hope that the story arc and like the characters were impressive enough for him to understand this movie and to like it. Because when I was watching it the entire time, me and Roper, who's been on the show before, because him and I went to go and see it together, the entire movie we're just pointing and going, oh, a displacer beast, or oh, a rust eater, or oh, you know, just so many things that we're like, oh, I can't believe we're getting to see this, you know, like all the things that we'd been playing for decades, actually getting to see done on the big screen in a good way was pretty, pretty magical.
Yeah. Yeah. Apologies to our SIFPOP members, who I accidentally called members of a different club.
Which you can also feel free to be a part of.
You can be a part of that one, too. But yes, apologies for calling that wrong. Ian, what are some of your questions before we get too much further? Like, what are some of your, like, as you're going into it, things you would want to know before you know, kind of head in? You're kind of already sold. It's not like you're not going to movie.
You've answered a lot of my questions, so I'm just going to talk about Reign of Fire instead, because we've watched Reign of Fire last night, and that was a lot of fun. But I do have a couple of questions, but more, I mean, Aaron, you've answered the main question, which was, did it play well for a person that has only played D&D for 15 minutes, and upon watching this movie hadn't played at all? How daunting.
I was really hoping that, like, him playing that 15 minutes would have been what unlocked the movie.
Yes,
for
the
him.
Entire,
like,
movie.
He went into this hating it, and he was going to tear it up. But my 15-minute campaign, saved it, and it's now the greatest movie of the year.
Saving role, for sure.
The best movie of the year for me now.
So, I mean, it's pretty clear that you enjoyed it, despite not being a D&D nerd. So, I guess, Andrew... did it feel enough for you? Did it play it too safe? Because my biggest concern is, selfishly, and I know this is selfish, it won't be D&D enough, and it will be D&D light or D&D for a wide audience, which is great, get more people in, but I still want some stuff that kind of winks and nods at me and says, you know what, you're a dungeon master, you're going to enjoy this.
Yes. You are going to get that and then some in this movie.
That's amazing.
At the same time, and that's why I think, that's why I come away from this movie going, I love this movie, is because not only can it tell a narrative story that everybody can enjoy, thanks to Aaron letting me know that, but when it comes to people like you and I who have been playing for years and we know, like, creatures and spells and locations and characters, that whenever they pop up on screen, it's not only done not as camp, like, hey, look what we got.
Yeah, we got a beholder.
Know, for the scene. Yeah, here's a beholder. Ooh, you know, it's not like that. It's everything makes sense for the story being told.
That's awesome.
But at the same time, in your head, you're going, oh, it's here. So I can't believe this is going. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
I'm going to compare it to Iron Man. I think, you know, this is another first movie in a geek, you know, centered culture that had to appeal to a broad audience to do what it does. Right. Mm. And I think Iron Man got that recipe correct. Right. Where you don't have to know even who Iron Man is, or any of the Marvel culture, to go to that movie and understand the story, understand what happens. There are some winks and nods to people who do, you know, get that stuff, I'm sure. In the same way that Marvel then started to get a little more geeky and, you know, nerdy the further it got, you know, the big one for me was the first, and it's fairly early, right? Was the first Thanos sighting as one of the post-credit scenes. I forget which movie that was.
The Avengers, first Avengers.
The Avengers, right? That was the first time I was like, I don't get that reference. I have no, like, they're
especially
clear...
considering it's a reference they ignore for the rest. They never come back to it.
But I'm just saying, well, I'm saying if Dungeons & Dragons wants to be a little even more, you know, specific about some things that D&D people will get, that could probably come down the road. Mm. I'm interested if they can break out of, oh, we have to have the same characters, do the second movie, you know, because everybody loves these characters from the first movie.
Really, you should have the same actors playing different characters.
But that'd be amazing.
That's exactly what they should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm not going to lie, I freaking love that idea.
It
would have to be an anthological series,
of course,
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be incredible. I mean, that kind of leads.
I am so on board for
that. Let's do it. I mean, it's our choice. My other question kind of links into that quite nicely, and anybody can answer it. It's, do the actors feel like that they're in a cheesy D&D movie, or are they like? Because my worry with Chris Pine is that he would almost be eye rolling to the camera about what he's doing. Oh, no. But everyone seems like they're in it and not hamming it up.
I will say there is levity throughout this entire movie. And a lot of it is, you know, I wouldn't say meta humor. You know, it's not self-aware, but at the same time, the characters, what would you put? There's an actual phrase for it, like a hanging a light.
Hanging a lantern.
Yeah, hanging a lantern.
Hanging a lantern. Yeah. There's a lot of hanging the lanterns, you know, of like references and stuff like that. And like Easter eggs, you know, stuff. But at the center of it all, the characters in this movie are so lovable, yet because they're authentic, they're genuine. They don't feel like, you know, characters that have been created to tell jokes. They felt like real fleshed out characters that actually have a purpose.
That's awesome.
I think there's something interesting about the energy of these characters that's different from almost any other movie I've seen. And I think it's something you're trying to kind of dig into, Ian. I think these characters, they are not self-aware in the way that you're talking about, where there's almost a fourth wall eye roll, you know, look to the camera and did I just say that? You know, like whatever it might be. It's not that, but they interact with their story with a different energy than I'm used to my characters interacting with. It's hilarious. It's great. But there really is this energy of, I guess it's D&D energy, right? Like there's this story progress energy of, hey, why don't we try this? Well, hey, why don't we try this? You know, kind of thing that happens in this that isn't usually what we see in our characters from movies, because there's usually a confidence about their decisions because their decisions are based on, you know, these elaborate backstories that they've made for themselves and different things. And so there's a confidence about how they're acting and what they're doing. And that is stripped away from these characters a little bit, purposely, I think, because both for the humor and for the D&D-ness of it all. And it just kind of works. It just kind of works for me. And I think Chris Pine kind of leads the way in that. I think he is, in many ways, I wouldn't call him the dungeon master, because you...
the party leader.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's called the face, is what it's called in the camp or in D&D. He's the face of the group. He's the one that interacts with everybody. Mm-hmm. He has the highest charisma. I will say, Ian, I don't know if this is what you meant, but everybody is playing their character archetype to perfection.
Oh,
like
nice.
They're like the charismatic and silver-tongued bard, you know, or the butt-kicking barbarian. Yeah. Or the holier-than-thou paladin. You know, everybody, like, the tropes that you see in a lot of these characters, they are embodying those, but they also feel like real, genuine people, too.
That's awesome. I'm really pumped. Because the crazy thing about D&D games, and which is it's so hard to adapt it, is that you do have a bunch of regular people that are playing playing other characters that are in life-threatening situations, but always manage to have a joke at the same time and have to pretend that they have this wealth of knowledge and are inhabiting a person that's been there for decades and decades and has all of this experience. So if the movie mirrors that, that's an insane trick to pull off. That's, I'm really excited for that.
I think this cast is actually astounding. I love... I can't think of a weak link here.
I can't pick who I like the most.
I was expecting Michelle Rodriguez to be the weak link. She's incredible in this movie.
So
it may be the best performance she's ever given. She's perfect for the role. Sophia Lillis is amazing in this. Chris Pine is, you know, pining.
So charming. I mean, I am struggling. Maybe Ryan Reynolds. It'd be hard pressed to find somebody who
Ryan
I think could have pulled
is
off
in this movie.
I'm saying that Ryan Reynolds would be the only person I could think of that could pull off that charming. That cameo blew me away. Like, so unexpected.
Yeah.
But I think that Chris Pine, only Ryan Reynolds could have probably pulled off that charismatic, charming type of character more. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's perfect casting
around. I think there's too much winky Deadpool-ness about, like, that comes with him as baggage now.
He would have been looking at the camera.
Yeah, I don't know that he could do what Chris Pine did in this movie. And that may be baggage we just have with him, but it still, you know, impacts our ability to see it. Regis Jean Page loved that character in this movie. It was very in many ways Old Spice guy. There was kind of a little bit of that energy to that character, which I really, really liked. I also like that there could be that kind of character in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's just I don't know. I had so much. I cannot wait to watch this again. In fact, I'm going to beg Ian when he goes to see it to let me come with him.
Yes.
No, I was literally just about to tell you, Ian, if you're going to see it while you're in town, let me know because I want to go and see it again.
Oh, it is that kind of movie. It's definitely a movie I want to see again and again
again. Let's do it.
The only name we haven't, the two names we haven't thrown out, Justice Smith, who I think is great in this, as everybody is, and then Hugh Grant. Who is just just make Hugh Grant every role like this. Like, he's just so perfect in this role. Just so, and I don't want to spoil anything about anybody's role in this movie, but man, Hugh Grant is so good in this.
I was sold on Hugh Grant being in this movie as soon as I saw the interviews, and he just hammed it up. He was like, I don't know what I just filmed. It had something to do with a board game. And I just turned up, I said some things, and I left.
You can't tell. He's great. He really is.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Ever since he did, I can't remember which one came first, either Paddington 2 or The Gentleman. Mm-hmm.
The
whenever
Gentleman
he started,
ruined Hugh Grant for me. I can't watch him do anything else other than that. It's so good.
Yeah.
Well, then you're in luck. It's not quite that extreme, but it's a character a lot like that Gentleman character.
Yeah.
Man, this movie's so good.
It really is. It really is. It really is that good, and it just makes me so excited. I hope that they are able to continue making interesting, unique movies, Daly and Goldstein, and don't necessarily get locked into making one of these every 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, maybe make one more of them, but maybe do another movie first. Like, to me, if I had the ear of a young director or director pair in this case, that is having, you know, some kind of like success like this, because they are, the reviews on this are good. Game Night reviews were amazing. I would just say, make sure you're really thinking about the one for them, one for me kind of thing, because you don't want to get lost in, well, I'm just going to say, Ryan Coogler territory, where he's an incredible director, but it's just like, I'm ready for the next like Coogler unique, you know, fresh idea as opposed to another Marvel movie. I'd really like them to keep doing fun, you know, fresh stories.
Man, the reviews are really good. That's crazy.
I'm excited. It's well earned. It's well deserved.
Yeah. One last thing.
Mid-credit scene.
There is. You already spoiled that, though. There is a mid-credit scene. My one last thing is I think this movie confirmed to me that if I ever play a full D&D campaign, more than 15 minutes long, that I definitely want to be a bard. That's where my heart is at.
It is easily my favorite. It's my favorite class.
Yeah.
So is utility as well. That's what I think might be daunting for you, Aaron, is if you mess it up, the team's going to be punished.
I like it.
Yeah, that's why, not to give it away, but in the pre-show you play, your character class was a fighter. Mm-hmm. And it's really the introduction class for a lot of people that are a barbarian.
It was really just inspired work by you to make the pacifist a fighter. Yes. Character. That was just inspired work.
Well, I mean, you can't really, for a 15-minute campaign, you can't have a healer. How many times is a character going to need to be healed?
That's fair.
So
we tried.
I mean, if Ian was like constantly getting hit, I mean, either I was doing something very wrong with that campaign, or Ian was doing something very wrong with that campaign.
Both things can be true.
It is true.
That is very true. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
That is Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves. Big recommend. Huge recommend from both Andrew and I. Go see it. It is really, really fun.
I just will.
Just a great time, man. I love all kinds of movies, but there is just something about going to a movie and just having a blast that is, you know, that really hits the sweet spot. So.
I know you're only a singular person and you can't speak for everybody, Aaron, mm-hmm. but after watching this movie, were you at all like intrigued to play D&D? Like, did you walk out of the theater going, that type of world is interesting. Maybe that's something I could try and tell a story in.
It didn't expand
like
my interest in D&D any more than it already was. Okay. I have a few D&D lovers in my life, and so I am aware of many of the ins and outs of kind of how that works, but for me the interest has always been performative. If I'm going to play D&D, I want there to be as big an audience as possible, and I don't care how that makes me sound. I like performing. I like being in front of people and entertaining them. So
yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
So that would be the fun part for me, for sure. Not the world building. Yeah, there's nothing about this movie that was like, changed my view on D&D or my interaction with it. So there you go.
Fair enough. Well, regardless, I do hope that this movie gets more people interested in playing, because it is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And it's I'm glad that we're seeing this resurgence of it.
I'm amazed they haven't released this as a campaign alongside the movie coming out. That seems like a baffling missed like a opportunity. Yeah, just a 5e edition. Like, I don't get it.
I think Wizards of the Coast was way more worried about their PR nightmare they had earlier at the beginning of this year.
Oh, you think they're worried about that? That's cute.
they redacted everything. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
well, not everything,
I think what Ian's saying, I have no idea what you're talking about, by the way, but I think what Ian's saying is, yeah, they may have redacted things, but he doesn't think they were all that concerned.
I don't think
on the other side of the screen or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let us move into the best ever challenge. But before we do, thank you to our amazing Sif Pop members.
And the Sin Club.
Thanks, Ian. Thank you.
And the Sin Club.
Thank you, Ian. The Sif Pop members this week have a bonus episode of us playing D&D together. So if you're interested in that, support starts at $3 a month. I think the bonus episode level is higher than that, but you can check all that out at patreon.com/siftpop. And we try to do a bonus episode every week and a lot of other fun stuff. So go check that out, patreon.com/siftpop. And underneath all of it, you're supporting this podcast and the associated website. And thank you for doing that. It means the world.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's move into the best ever challenge. We're doing best ever long sequels in honor of John Wick cresting the 2-hour, 40-minute mark. We went with the 2.5 as being what makes a long movie.
And there is a movie that is 2 hours and 29 minutes. Yeah, and if anybody has another list, I'm calling you out. I'm calling you out.
Yeah, you will not be seeing that movie on my list because it fell 1 minute short of being long enough. We'll go number five to number one. And if you have it any higher on your list,
drop!
Then we will wait to talk about it until it's at the highest point on somebody's list. Kick us off at number five. Andrew, what do you got?
I'm going to go with The Raid 2 Barindal. This is such a fascinating action film. I think that the actual story arc is a lot more complex than the first one. The first one is pretty much just Dread, which is funny because both movies came out the same year, Dread and the first Raid movie. The first one is just keep going up the levels of the tower until you get to the big bad. This movie is a lot more along the lines of something like L.A. Confidential, if it had like some of the best choreographed fight scenes you've ever seen. I absolutely love this movie, the franchise. It can get a little, it's not something you could watch every day. It is rough, but great Speak acting, great choreography. I don't know if I could watch that fight in the knife or that knife fight in the kitchen.
No, you're right. Yeah. I'm going to be sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was top of my honorable mentions, though. Love this movie.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Who next?
I'll go next. My number five is Terminator 2.
Trump. Can you do that again louder?
Trump.
Right. Good. Wow. Number five.
Trump.
Much better.
Hold on a tick. T2 is 2 hours and 17 minutes
long.
No,
it is not.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
According to IMDb, it is.
Nope. Not according to my Googling.
Are you watching the regular T2 or are you watching the director's cut?
I'm watching the one that Google said was 2 hours and 33 minutes long.
Regardless, I just want everybody to know, in my research, if it had popped up as longer, it would have been pretty high up on my
list. Yeah, I get 233 when I Google it.
Come on, IMDb, get your head in the game.
Right.
Yeah, I can
but
I can
go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
But yeah,
off.
Go ahead, Ian.
Well, my number five is Aliens.
Ooh.
Not Trumped. Interesting.
Is that one?
Is this going to be the rest of the show? You're just Googling how long the run times are.
2 hours and 17 minutes.
Wait, is it actually? Wait.
Aliens.
I didn't have Aliens in my research.
2 hours 34.
This is fun. This is fun,
this
guys.
This is the best.
This is...
It's all fascinating to see like all the different...
really detailed on my searching. But yeah, anyway, Aliens.
It would have made my list too, let's just say that.
I was fascinated that I wasn't trumped on this, to be honest.
My copy of Terminator 2 is 2 hours and 33 minutes and 25 seconds.
Okay. So.
Is it director's cut or this theatrical release?
This is the best. It's just the movie. It's the movie. What is it? I didn't even know there was a director's cut.
Of course there is. It's Cameron.
Oh my God. You haven't seen the director's cut? This is a tangent, but it's an important one.
Oh yeah, there's like 20 minutes of footage that you don't see in the regular film.
My copy of Aliens is 2 hours and 34 minutes and 26
seconds.
There
it is.
Do you have the director's cut or do you have it?
So...
Okay. Yeah, so we're going to have differing... movies on our list.
Some of us are going to have right lists and you're going to have the wrong list.
Can't trust IMDb.
You really can't.
You trust.
Anyway, Aliens. Yeah, great movie. Love it.
It's really good.
Alien is incredible, and which one do I pop in more? I think I do put Aliens in more. I love that it swings from genres. I think the pacing is slightly better. Sigourney Weaver just kicks all to the bottom. I love this movie.
The Queen Alien is one of the greatest...
Yes.
Designed villains in cinematic history.
So scary, it's, so good.
Yeah.
All right. On to our number fours. And just assume for everything that we say that we mean the director's cut.
Yes.
Andrew, what do you got?
3 hours and 1 minute. I'm going to go with Endgame.
Had it my honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions.
Okay, I didn't know.
Correct. To be fair, it would have been in your honorable mentions as well.
It's true. It really would have. Endgame, it's not as good as Infinity War, which is 2 hours and 29 minutes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
The director's cut is, so, anyway.
Man, I can't wait for that director's cut to come out. I wish it had a week prior. We could have put it on our list. But no, Endgame is great. The story, the finality of that entire first sequence, or the, I guess you could say the first story arc of a Marvel, was just to see it come to fruition was beautiful.
Yeah,
a lot of fan service, man. The Captain America picking up Mjolnir is probably one of the most shocking and like jaw dropping cinematic moments ever.
Yeah, it was awesome
for me.
It was great.
Yeah,
totally agree.
I think it's telling that we mainly talk about the final scene and not the rest of the movie, but we will move on.
I think everybody here was great. Yeah, I think everybody here thinks Infinity War is better than Endgame.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. I for some reason thought not.
No, no.
Cool. Oh, I think it's pretty widely agreed upon. I mean, there are more emotional beats and like tugging at your heartstrings and like great cinematic like moments in Endgame, but I think narratively, I think Infinity War is far superior.
I wish that last scene was in Infinity War. That's
it's in Infinity War. It's so weird that Infinity War of the two movies is the complete movie.
Yes,
and the second movie feels like half a movie.
It's weird.
Yeah, yeah. It's strange.
A very strange trip to pull off.
It's a 3 hour long half a movie.
Yeah. So weird.
All right, my number four will probably get trumped. I have The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly at number four.
Oh,
I didn't put these on because it's an anthology. Mm-hmm. It's not really a sequel, but yeah.
Okay,
I would have counted it as a sequel.
Same character though, right?
Yeah.
No, it's not. He's a different character in every movie.
I guess I misunderstood that. Well, I still love this movie, and I think it has one of the most incredible. I think it just has textbook. Show it to your film studies classes how you create tension, especially in that last scene. So, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is awesome.
Nice.
Yep.
Ian, what's your number four?
Blade Runner 2049.
Mm-hmm. Had that my
what number is this? Your four?
This is my number four.
Yeah.
Aaron, if you wouldn't mind.
I figured as much.
It's one of my favorite things is a person requesting their own voice.
Yes. To save time, could you press the button for me?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to keep my throat, you know,
cool.
from getting too raspy.
Cool. We'll talk about that later then. Andrew, we are to you for your number three.
Later is right now.
Very nice.
Blade Runner 2049.
Nice.
It's a good choice. I definitely had it in my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
I'm not really a big fan of the first Blade Runner. It's one of those movies that it's just not for me. But I can understand why people love it. But Blade Runner 2049 is, I think Denis Villeneuve for me is my favorite director working in Hollywood right now. He's not only a visual master, but the way that he can tell a story, so many different ways. Like you think. I think it's telling of how impressive he is and how versatile he is that the same guy who did Prisoners did Arrival and he did Blade Runner 2049.
Wild. The genre hopping is incredible.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't like Enemy, but it's the same guy. The fact that he can do all of these movies and that they feel so diverse and everything. Can't wait for Dune Part 2 to come out. Blade Runner 2049 is one of the most visually beautiful movies ever, but also the sound design in that movie is out of this world. If you missed out on seeing Blade Runner in the theaters with that sound system that it has, it's some of the best sound design ever.
I totally agree that Blade Runner 2049 is amazing, and also agree that I am highly anticipating the second half of Dune.
Yes.
Which
will feel like a whole movie.
All right, so I think that means my number three, Dark Knight, is what I have.
Everybody
loves the Dark Knight, best movie ever. Dark Knight. I'm just kidding. I had it. I had it at number three.
Wow.
All right, on to your number three, Ian.
Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Well, I will do this for you. Am I doing it for you, Andrew? Because I'm not doing it for me.
You're doing it
okay,
for me.
Okay, I'll do it for you.
Then
I will wait. I will wait to say what I want to say.
Okay.
So it's Andrew's turn.
You're saying it doesn't count.
Andrew, what is your number two?
This is where I have The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, me too. It's my number two.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the correct place to have
well
it.
Well done. Yeah. Yeah, this is, yeah, Aaron, you were off by one.
I was.
That's a critical miss. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dark Knight. It's great. Heath Ledger, best Joker, live action Joker we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's saying something because there's been a few.
Yes.
Yeah. Joker is one of two characters that two actors have won an Oscar for playing the same
character. I'm partial to the Zach Galifianakis myself, but you know, you do you.
You know what? Lego Batman is beyond hilarious. It really is. But no, I love Batman. Actually, my new Batman statue just arrived in the mail today.
Nice.
Here, I'll show you.
Oh, Andrew is
he's departed.
He's going to get some
mail. Yeah, nice. You got the old one. Nice.
Yeah,
I love the gray.
Yeah,
and blue.
That's beautiful.
It's always been my favorite. Mm,
that's gorgeous.
And this is from Hush. But yeah, love Batman, favorite DC character, so it's kind of, there's a bias, there's a biasness to me in this movie.
Nice.
Ian, did you have anything you wanted to add about it?
I mean,
that nobody has ever heard about The Dark Knight.
I think it's a hugely underrated film. No, it's brilliant, it's fun, it's as much Heath Ledger's movie as it is Christian Bale's, it's incredible, I love it.
I have this pin here. Ian, you want to see a magic trick?
Yes, I do. Do it.
What color is that pin, Aaron?
This pin is
blue.
If only there were a sequel to Liar Liar that was over 2.5 hours long, uh-huh. I would be there.
I want it.
I think Dark Knight is amazing. It is an incredible performance, and Christopher Nolan knows how to make good movies. So there
yes,
you go.
Yes, he does.
All right, so I think that means we are on to your... Did you just do your number two, Andrew?
I think we shared. I think Ian and I
both
shared.
Our number two.
My number two.
Yes.
This is where I have Avatar: The Way of Water. Thank you very much. This movie is amazing, and that is all to be said about that. Glad everybody agrees. On to our number
one. I think I can pull out one of his cables. So, man that I respect and just
Ian,
so
are you
wrong.
On my side with Way of Water?
There's only one side of history to be on. Yeah, I did not. Yeah, I did not. Okay?
Yeah.
I did not but this movie.
You and I have seen it since we've done that review. Mm-hmm. And I saw it on a regular screen where like I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Ian, you knew this. When I first saw Way of Water, I saw it with 3D, mm-hmm. like regular 3D, and it was all dark, and I couldn't tell. I hate going to 3D movies, but I did see it on a regular screen, and yeah, there is no question that it is the most visually stunning movie ever created.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah, it's a very
so why
pretty
are we talking about John Wick again?
Yeah.
Anyways, no, I totally get the haters on this.
Oh, don't you call me a hater just because I don't like it.
Just because I hate something doesn't mean I'm a hater.
Uh-huh.
I think,
the objective viewpoint.
Yeah, Aaron mispronounced realist.
Uh-huh. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're moving on. yes. All right, let's get to our number ones. Andrew, kick us off.
Two Towers.
Nice.
Nice. Okay, so here's where I will say, how can there be a sequel when it's all one movie?
Well played. Well played.
There is an end to the Fellowship.
You know, you're so wrong. There was just a delay. There was just a delay in starting the middle of the movie.
Why are we talking about Way of Water again?
All right.
You know, Aaron, for as many times as I've made that argument on this show that they're all just one movie... Well played. Well played.
But I totally get it. It would have been my number one had I not wanted to have been a goofball.
Oh,
So, mm-hmm. So there you go.
It's a great movie. It's good.
Wait, so I'm just curious, going around, What is your guys' favorite of the trilogy?
2, 1, 3.
I genuinely can't. I just can't. I can't even. It's too difficult. They're all so amazing, and they really are, in my mind, one experience. One glorious 10-hour experience.
Yeah, totally get it.
Yeah. So, but yeah, number 2 is the best. I think it was actually Jeremy who said that the reason why he liked Two Towers the most as well is because if you think of Lord of the Rings as a sandwich, all the deliciousness is in the middle, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't even know how to argue against myself, like, to pick one. Like, it's just like, yeah, but what about this from this one? How can I call it Two Towers when the first one has so much of the incredible Frodo and Sam stuff? Like, it's just, you know, and when the last one, you know, somehow resolves all this stuff. Like, I just, it's just, yeah, it's, I can't rank them. All right, so you guys both had, or no, you had Lord of the Rings at number one.
That was my number 3.
And that was your number 3. So I guess it's time for my number 1, which is also an amazing movie that we all agree on. I love this, that my top 2 are just total agreements. Last Jedi is my number 1.
I mean, I put sequel. It into my honorable mentions to be a troll.
Man, I think this movie's good. Someday soon, it may actually surpass Empire for me, but I need a couple more watches before I can say that. It's just, what can I say? I think if Star Wars had made the artistic decision and launched off of this for the third one instead of reverting to what they wanted to do, I think it would have opened up that world in incredible ways.
Yeah. I actually agree. I love The Last Jedi. It's my favorite of the new trilogy. It's just not better than the five movies that I mentioned.
sure. I understand that. Ian, what do you have at number 1?
I'm breaking the rules. It's my personal favorite. It is the best. It's Terminator 2 Judgment Day. This damn movie is so good. Considering, like, the original Terminator is bordering on goofy with some of, like, the kooky special effects and some of the melodrama, this movie just goes hard, and it is depressing, but it is still uplifting. It has some of the best action set pieces of any movie in history. I can watch every second of this movie and it feels like it's half an hour has gone by, not 2.5. It is a masterpiece of action film making and world building, and I adore it. I love this movie so much.
Yeah, it's the second best Cameron movie on this list for sure. Yeah,
I mean, Aliens is good, but it's not as good as Terminator 2.
Well, T2 would have been number 3 on my list for sure.
Yeah.
So, and you honestly, I know it may sound like I was joking earlier, but you really do need to see the director's cut of Terminator 2.
I don't
even
know what the differences are. I don't know what they cut.
Oh, really?
I don't know that I've seen the original. Oh, then,
yeah. This is the only version I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah.
There's an entire sequence where they actually do operation on the Terminator.
Oh, yeah, like I've always seen that. Yeah.
Where they cut his head open.
They cut that out?
Yeah, that wasn't...
But that's why they removed the chip.
I know.
That's baffling.
That wasn't in the theatrical release.
That's weird.
Also, at the end of the movie, when the T-1000 is like glitching out and stuff, like when he puts... That's not in the theatrical release
weird.
Either.
Yeah. All right. Honorable mentions. I'll throw out Godfather 2 and No Time to Die, I think are both worth at least mentioning. What else did you guys have?
Endgame, The Raid 2, The Dark Knight Rises, because I do enjoy that, and it's a good movie. It's still good. No Time to Die and The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got all mine, so good job.
All right, let's move on and finish off with The Buried Treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want people to know about? Ian, you are our guest, so you will go last.
That's me.
I will go first. There's a new version of The Challenge out. It's The Challenge World Championship. It is out on Paramount Plus. And this combines The Challenge USA, The Challenge Australia, The Challenge... England, UK. Sorry, Ian, I forgot what your country was there.
Do
for
not need to apologize. I try to forget daily.
And The Challenge Argentina, And it combines some of the best from those challenges with some of the best from the OG challenge on MTV. They call them Legends. And each of the Legends teams up with one of the world players, and they are competing. Really enjoying the dynamics. One of my favorite things about the challenge is that the players play season after season after season. So it's kind of like, you know, rooting for your favorite sports team, those kind of things. And really enjoying this season. So, yeah, check out the Challenge World Championships on Paramount Plus if you want to. Andrew, what do you got?
Believe it or not, I am recommending a Star Wars movie, The Phantom Menace.
Nice!
Because I just rewatched it a couple days ago. This is a good movie, guys.
It's my favorite Star Wars
movie. It's a good
movie. I'm not even being dumb or ironic or anything. It's my favorite Star Wars movie.
I can't go that far, but I mean, it's been years since I've seen it.
Andrew's coming out with a hot take, like being like, you know what, guys, Phantom Menace is okay, and then Ian's like jumping at the chasm.
Yes.
He's just like, nope, best Star Wars movie ever.
It is. I love, for me, it's my favorite.
But I forgot pod racing. That's one of the coolest scenes. And you know what? I would love Disney to do a pod racing miniseries, like following around drivers and stuff, like the circuit. That would be really cool. Darth Maul, one of my favorite Star Wars villains. He's so good. And of course, Qui-Gon, man. Ugh. There's just so much to love about this movie. I forget the name of the little young boy who played the Anakin. I feel like a fool because I've...
Was it Jake something? Jake Sully.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
No, it's Jake Sully.
Get off of that movie. Jake Lloyd.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake Lloyd. I thought he was good. Duel of Fates, best lightsaber fight of any. It's the best lightsaber fight of any Star Wars.
Best finale of any Star Wars movie, I think.
I don't have a problem with the prequel love. It's been an interesting journey with the prequels because with almost all of them, I really enjoyed them the first time I watched them because of my love for Star Wars and just, oh, new Star Wars stuff. This is awesome. And then on rewatches, it became obvious that the movies were really bogged down in some, political machinations, that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, subterfuge.
That's great. It kind of lost some of the shine. And then I'm like, you know what? But the movies are good, okay? I've gone full circle on these movies. But yeah, I think The Phantom Menace is fine.
Still hate Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, I don't blame you. All right, that brings us to you, Ian. What is your buried treasure?
I'm going to recommend something English that most people can't watch, and it's a little bit
French. Why aren't you talking about Reign of Fire?
Oh, it's I should be talking about Reign of Fire.
OG Dungeons & Dragons. There are dungeons and dragons in that movie.
Okay, we'll see how quick Phil can adapt. Reign of Fire. Genuinely, Reign of Fire is excellent. Christian Bale is really good.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey is unrecognizable and freaking off the charts good and incredible.
I kind of look like McConaughey.
You do.
A little bit. You actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
far more approachable. the other guy, Jared Butler, looks like James McAvoy in this movie and sounds like him very much. Both being Scottish.
So he gets all crispy.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely bit of world building. I'm amazed that Reign of Fire hasn't... Nicely done, Phil. I'm amazed that...
Well done, Phil.
I'm amazed that...
Coming in clutch.
Reign of Fire hasn't been made into a spin-off series yet and hasn't had, like, a world-building, like, kind of... Lord of the Rings? Like, not Lord of the Rings. The other one. Game of Thrones kind of series where we follow them through this dragon apocalypse.
Yeah, especially considering, and I guess spoilers for a really old movie, but considering it ends with dragons still around. It's just that they have been, handicapped in a huge way, right? Like without spoiling exactly what it is, a TV series following like how
cleanup
would be really, really interesting.
Reclaiming
so,
the planet. Yeah,
I just don't think people know about this movie. I just don't think so. Yeah, I just don't think they know.
I enjoyed it. Cool. Good stuff.
What was the other one you were going to
never know.
Okay, fair enough. My own fault. It's my own fault. I played myself.
I will be back and I'll save it for
all right,
then.
Fair enough.
That skydiving scene and
oh, it's so good.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, that is Reign of Fire, available for rent or purchase wherever you purchase digital movies. The Phantom Menace, available on Disney Plus, and the Challenge World Championship on Paramount Plus. We did it, guys. Woo! We managed to accomplish a movie in under 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Nice.
So, congratulations to us. Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It's part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Well, thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you to Ian Whittington for being with us.
That's me.
Mr. Whittington, what would you like people to find you?
If you want my hot takes on Star Wars, then you should go to Captain's Pod, which is a podcast where myself and Danae host a word I can't say. Danae Hughes, and I talk about Star Trek. We're currently going through Star Trek Picard Season 3. So find that wherever you find podcast players. Podcast players? Podcasts.
Sure. Or
or players. I mean,
technically have to find a podcast player to listen to the podcast. Correct. So you're not wrong.
Nope. Yeah. Do it. Find one of those and listen.
Don't hate the podcast player. Hate the podcast game. We also thank our amazing Sif Pop members. Our Sif Pop members
for the street.
40 for supporting what goes on or supporting whatever the case may be. Starts at $3 a month. You get access to a lot of fun stuff there. So go check that out at patreon.com/sifpop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review wherever you listen, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also email us feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than walking back up the stairs. We will be back next week with Super Mario Brothers and Air. That's going to be a fun show.
Double feature.
We will see you then.
Bye.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
Why did you say that name?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.